Hello and thanks for listening to RT Radio 1's The Rolling Wave podcast with me, Aoife McCormick. In this episode, I'm talking to piper Louise Mulcahy about some of the amazing work she's done on the history of women Uilleann pipers. Moira Ní Ra'adha there, playing The Rainy Day and The Merry Blacksmith from the album The Piper's Rock, which was released in 1978. And that was the first time a woman Uilleann piper was recorded commercially. When we think of the great Uilleann pipers of the last 100 or 150 years or so, we think of fantastic players like Seamus Ennis, Willie Clancy, Tommy Reck, Johnny Doran, Leo Rosam and many, many more. But of course, what they all have in common, in addition to playing the pipes, is that they were all men. So I think it's probably fair to say that the Uilleann piping tradition throughout the 19th and 20th centuries has been quite male dominated. But is it that there weren't any women Uilleann pipers, or is it more that we don't know much about them? Louise Mulcahy is a piper herself, and she's been doing lots of work in the last while researching the history of women Uilleann pipers, and she's here with me now in studio. Louise, you're very welcome to The Rolling Wave. That track from Moira Ní Ra'adha, tell me a little bit about Moira and about that album.
So The Piper's Rock, I remember buying that recording in Ushie Music Store in Cork City, probably with some confirmation money or something like that. But certainly Moira's name had been mentioned in the family home and identified as one of the female pipers at that time. But the recording features Mick O'Brien, it features Davy Spillane, Ona Rivig, Robbie Hannan, and all that era of great pipers. And it's fantastic that the Moira is on that, and well deserved. A really fascinating character and great academic. And I actually visited her when I was probably around 15. I asked my father to make contact, and that I really wanted to meet her and play some tunes with her. And I remember visiting her in her family home. And at the time she had young boys, I think six young boys, and they were all listening to us playing the pipes. And we had great conversation in relation to piping matters and maintenance issues, and certainly learned some tunes from her as well, which was a really lovely meeting. And we've remained friends ever since, and she's been very generous in the information that she's shared with me throughout this journey.
I mentioned a great number of male pipers in my introduction. They're all brilliant musicians, but why do you think the pipes in particular, or was it particular to the pipes, why do you think they were so male dominated as an instrument?
I think it's a great question, and certainly a topic for conversation, certainly in recent times. I think it applies to lots of instruments, and certainly the documentation of women in Irish traditional music is sparse and thin on the ground. But I think that particularly the pipes, probably the visibility of women playing pipes was certainly minimal at the time, and probably the quality of the instrument, the availability of the instrument, and certainly it was a tradition that the pipes were passed on to the male member of the family. And that was often the case. And certainly even with the really musical families, that often happened as well. But it's great to see that changing now.
In your research, and we're going to talk about some of these women in a minute, but in your research, you profile maybe about eight women pipers. But when you took on this project in the first place, I mean, where did you start? You couldn't go to the encyclopedia and look it up and find the entry on women pipers. Where did you begin?
You're correct. We had the publication at home, the O'Neill's Minstrels and Musicians, and I remember looking through the images in that. But certainly there was quite a large amount of information on Molly Morrissey and Mae McCarthy, but certainly none in relation to Anna Barry and Mrs. Murphy. So I discovered that Mrs. Murphy was from Limerick, and then certain stars and planets aligned that I got in contact with her grandson, who was certainly so receptive to me discovering additional facts about Mrs. Murphy. And then I discovered her daughter is actually still living in Limerick City, who's in her 80s at the moment as well. And she's shared some information, and other members of her family were very generous in giving me photographs, journal articles, diary entries. And really, I suppose this journey, there's a personal aspect to it as well, as in, you know, people are opening up their family albums. But from there, I went to of course, the usual haunts like the Irish Traditional Music Archive, na Pibrielin. But a lot of it was word of mouth and then leads that people would give me. Perhaps this person may be related to the woman in question. And actually, in relation to one of the women, Helena Rousham, as I mentioned, was also very helpful in information that she gave me about the students of Leo Rousham. So I identified key tutors of piping in the 40s, the 50s, and then went and looked to see if there were any women who were attending piping classes. And then as the leads then evolved and additional information presented. But also, I suppose, with modern technology and search engines in relation to Phyllis Crowder's very limited information of recent times on her. But I put in her surname because I thought it was quite an unusual surname. And I got an article from the Historical Society in East Wall on her father. And I read through the article, and at the very end of the article it said Christy Crowder's passed on the love of piping to his daughter Phyllis. And then so
a footnote, yes.
Yeah. And then I contacted the East Wall Society looking for to see if there was a family link or could they put me in touch with anybody. And I discovered that Phyllis is still living and loves classical music. And I met her a couple of weeks ago, and her daughter Maura.
Well, look, we'll talk about some of your research discoveries in a minute, but let's start with your own interest in playing the pipes. How did you start, or how did you get into pipe playing?
Absolutely. Well, I hope we had a huge tradition of music in the house. And I think some of my earliest memories are of going to sleep at night hearing my father play the accordion, and indeed first thing in the morning. And it mightn't have been unusual to hear him playing at 1 o'clock in the morning also. But we were steeped really in music from a very early age, and several recordings that had a huge collection of recordings at home. And it was something that we always spoke about around the dinner table. Recordings, live music was always being played in the house. And certainly piping tracks, all instruments would have been encouraged. We would have listened to lots of recordings at home as well as Dad's own music. And certainly Seamus Innes and Willie Clancy were regularly on the playlist at home. But I think around the age of 13, I started playing the pipes. I played the flute and the accordion and the whistle prior to that. But I loved the sound of the Uilleann pipes, and that was really something that had grabbed me from an early age. And I didn't think about whether it was something that was masculine or feminine, or whether it was something that a girl or a boy could engage with. I just loved the sound of the Uilleann pipes. I loved the power of the instrument, and I certainly loved when the drones and the regulators and the instrument was in operation together. So I set about asking Dad to get me a set of pipes, and I think it took probably 6 to 7 months, probably even a little longer. He said, "Are you really sure, you know, that you want to play the pipes?" And eventually he gave in, and I went to Dave Hegarty in Tralee for piping lessons, and attended the Piper's Club in Dublin once a month before the M7 motorway. So we used to get up at 5 in the morning and drive to Dublin once a month for piping lessons. And often I was the only girl in the piping class, but that never featured in conversation. I was there to gain enough material to practice for the next couple of weeks, and come back to Limerick and indeed go to school and play the pipes when I came home, play the flute and play music at home with Dad and Michelle as well. And then I would have attended the Willie Clancy Summer School. And as I said, there was always a huge collection of music at home. And certainly musical history was something that was very important as well. We would always trace the source of the tunes and the history. So I think I always had an inquiring mind into who the women were that played the pipes prior to myself or prior to Maura, Mary Mitchell or Mary McCarthy. And Dad had the O'Neill's minstrel and musicians.
Which is a fascinating one. There's a fascinating line in that publication where he talked about how there weren't that many women playing in public because you couldn't really play in public unless you were in dire circumstances. Is that right?
That's correct. In the 1830s and 1840s.
Dire necessity.
That's
sorry.
Correct.
Yes.
There are two pipers mentioned, Kitty Hanley from Limerick and Nance the Piper from Castle Lyons. And they're said to have started playing the pipes out of dire necessity. You're completely correct with that one, which is unfortunate circumstances upon the death of their husband. But one can only imagine that they had played the pipes at home. But they certainly made a living from playing the pipes after the death of their husband. So unfortunate circumstances.
So how many women does O'Neill mention in that? So mm-hmm. that publication was published, I think, in 1913. So yeah. does he have a few then in that
Yeah,
book?
There are a number of women profiled. There's an iconic image of Anna Barry from 1901, and she's pictured in a pristine white dress and white headgear. And an adjudicator from the day, from the competition, it was from the piping competition, said she looked like a dove amongst a flock of old crows. And there's also another piping image of a Mrs. Murphy from a piping competition, again held in Dublin in the early 1900s, and she's pictured centre of that. And then there's a number of women profiled. There's Molly Morrissey from the Cork Pipers Club and Mae McCarthy from the Cork Pipers Club also. And they're said to have, in the publication, it says that they were extremely talented individuals, could learn 3 and 4 tunes in a night. They were proficient dancers. Extensive touring schedule. Mae McCarthy toured in Birmingham and Wales, and I suppose cultural nationalism provided them with a platform for performance abroad as well.
Well, we're going to talk about some of those women in, mm-hmm. in more detail in a minute, and just referring to that photograph of Anna Barry, it really is an amazing picture. I think there are about 20 men in that photograph. They're all wearing black with black caps, black suits. They all look a lot older than she does. And then she's there in this really beautiful white lace dress. And it's
a fascinating image. Yeah. And I do recall sitting down and looking through the book in the early years of playing the pipes and looking at those images. And while her name is mentioned, there's very little information to back it up. And the same with Mrs. Murphy. So there's probably more extensive information on Molly Morrissey and McCarthy, and I always held questions about where I could find out more information on those women.
Okay, well, let's listen to another piece of music. You've chosen a piece by Heather Clark. Tell me who Heather Clark is and maybe introduce this tune for us.
That's right. Well, Heather's a very talented woman and trained as a GP and is currently working as a GP in Cork. But in the 70s, she grew up in Galway and featured in Bring Down the Lamp programme a performance in Jimmy O'Brien Moran's piping class. I think she played a slow air on that programme. And she actually wrote the Piping Tutor book in 1988. And provided a CD with that as well. And she did that during a gap year in school. Hand drawings, notated the tracks herself, notated all the music in the book, and certainly an extensive collection and heavily detailed tuition in the publication. But a really great player. But like that, she got married and had a family, but she's now coming back into the piping scene, which is brilliant to see. And I visited her in Cork and met her family, and she's still playing great. But I came across a recording of hers from 1988 from Patrick Hutchinson who recorded it at the Willie Clancy Summer School, and certainly great piping on it.
Heather Clark there playing the pipes as chosen by Louise Mulcahy, my guest this evening on The Rolling Wave. One of the women you mentioned there was Mrs. Margaret Murphy. Now, she was a fascinating character. Tell me a little bit about her.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed finding out about her. And I suppose this has been a great learning journey over the last number of months, indeed 2 years. And the image, as we spoke about, it's an iconic image. We see Eamon Cant in the front row of the photograph. And she won the Piping Rock This competition in 1914. But she was actually born in Limerick in 1893. In Thomangate, and she married Joseph Murphy, a very wealthy building contractor, and they built a beautiful house in Castletroy. But she loved music. She was a very proficient dancer, taught dancing. Her family was steeped in tradition, and her uncles, the Stornans, taught her dancing. But she was in a very fortunate position that she had Piper from Donore in Galway, and he came and lived with her for a year and tutored her every day on the Uilleann pipes, and eventually she entered this piping competition in Dublin in 1914 and won it.
And why did he come to live for a year? Was it just to teach her?
To teach her the pipes and bring her to a great standard in playing, which is amazing.
A great crash course of a year. Yeah.
Absolutely. But she danced, her husband danced. They visited Clare. She loved Clare music, loved entertaining. After she won the piping competition in 1914, she received a civic reception in Limerick. Pipe bands came out, many of Limerick City came out to cheer her on, and it was a proud moment for Limerick City and indeed for herself and her family. And it's well documented in Limerick in some of the newspapers there, articles on that. But Seamus Ennis visited her, and in the diaries of Seamus Ennis, it documents his meeting with her in Castletroy, and said that she had displayed a great command of the instrument.
And I mean, Seamus Ennis referred to her in the diaries, but do we know if he ever recorded her or any of the other collectors who were around at the time?
Absolutely.
Did they record her?
Ciara MacMahuna also spoke highly of her, and he called her the great Mrs. Murphy, but unfortunately she didn't want to be recorded. And as we to date, we have no recordings of her, but certainly played a beautiful image of her in Kilbaha playing outside what I can't remember the name of the pub nowadays, but it's still there. And she was a frequent visitor to Clare and loved the MacPeaks. Also visited her frequently in Limerick City. But it went on, she taught many successful dancers, and the O'Rourke School of Dancing in Limerick are a past pupil. The founder is a past pupil of Mrs. Murphy.
Well, we don't have, as you said, a recording of Mrs. Margaret Murphy, which is obviously a great pity, but we have, maybe after this broadcast you might find somebody might come
out. Hopefully there will be more.
A recording. But we have what is actually a relatively recent recording from Scultheroe, Willie Clancy. This was recorded by RTÉ Raidió na Gaeltachta in 2017, and this is Marian McCarthy. You might introduce this for us.
Absolutely. And Marian comes from a great musical family. This particular track is from Scultheroe 2017 at the Piping Recital, and it's a selection of slip jigs. But Marian's father, Tommy McCarthy, a fantastic musician, who was celebrated recently at the Cruinniú, Concertina Cruinniú, and her sister Bernadette and Jackie, all long-standing traditional musicians and have contributed greatly to the tradition. So I think we'll enjoy these slip jigs.
Marian McCarthy there, recorded at Scultheroe Willie Clancy in 2017, and that was recorded, as I say, by RTÉ Raidió na Gaeltachta. Another woman from different from the other end of the country is a woman called Netta Jane Nicol Johnson. And as you say yourself, she was an eccentric enough woman, but in the very best sense of that word.
Absolutely. Well, she was born in 1878 and passed away in 1952, and a very interesting, peculiar character. And this information I've come upon recently. She was from Carnlough on the Antrim coast, and she was a Protestant in Northern Ireland. She played Irish music. She was also a very fine organ player and a classical violin teacher. And she also advocated for cross-community cooperation. She was peculiar insofar as she loved to play music late at night, and that didn't go down too well with the local rector. She wanted to play the organ at 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning, so eventually she was banned from playing the organ in the locality. She had a funeral furnishing business, and she produced sewn shrouds for the deceased, apparently dark brown for Catholics and black for Protestants. And she also liked to walk late at night. But in relation to her Illan piping...
Yeah, how did she come to the Illan pipes?
Yeah, she loved the sound of the Illan pipes. And O'Mealy, who was based in Belfast at the time, a pipe maker and performer and teacher, visited the Antrim coast, the Fesh an Glaun, or the Antrim Fesh, and was an adjudicator there. And she came into contact with the sound of the Illan pipes and decided she wanted to learn and how to play them. So she travelled to O'Mealy in Belfast for lessons, and she acquired a beautiful set of O'Mealy pipes, which are actually in the Ulster Museum at the moment. And she continued to play and foster a love of music in the locality. But on her death, as I mentioned, she had a funeral furnishing business, and she wanted a glass coffin. And once she passed away, she wanted to be paraded around the locality with "Let Erin Remember." So I think I would like to sit down and have a I'd like to go back in time and sit down and have a conversation.
But she didn't get her wish, did she?
No, she didn't get her wish in the end. No, unfortunately.
Because it wasn't frowned upon, is it?
Absolutely, yeah. So I think she caused controversy right until the very end.
And do we know, or do you know, the types of tunes she would have played, or the types of repertoire she would have been interested in? Would it have been repertoire she took from her other instruments, or was she playing tunes from, you know, collections, or what was she playing?
I suppose one can assume that she probably incorporated some of the repertoire that she had on her possibly on the organ and on the classical violin, but I suppose she would have taken some of the repertoire from O'Mealy himself, who indeed was a fine performer.
And again, obviously no recordings.
No recordings.
Okay. In more recent times, the Sligo fiddle player Martin Wynne's sister, Bridget, also played the pipes. What do we know about her? Because she lived until 2001, so this is a much more sort of recent career or life we can talk about.
Absolutely. Well, I researched Bridget, and thanks to Brian Conway, who put me in touch with some relatives, and he also had lots of information himself. She was born in 1918, and she lived most of her life in Buffalo, in New York. And she had two sets of pipes, one in parts and another complete set, but she would have played at home a lot. She also played the flute. And she recorded a home recording in the 50s in New York. And I suppose one can assume from that she was happy, confident to it says probably a lot at the time, the social situation for women at the 50s was completely different to what it is now. So we can only assume that she was confident in her ability to play the pipes and the flute. But Brian recalls he spent a lot of time with Martin, and he recalls that Martin was very proud of his sister and would often mention that his sister played the pipes and that he was incredibly proud of her. And they visited Martin in a nursing home, and Bridget was there at the visit also, and she took out the recording for Brian and played it in its entirety from start to finish. So one can assume from that she was, you know, very proud of the fact that she did play the pipes, even if it was at home, probably due to social circumstances.
And that's not a recording that we have tonight, but is that a recording that you've heard?
It's a private recording, yes, and I have played it at lectures. So if there's people out there who would like to hear it, certainly hopefully they come along to the next lecture in Wexford.
Okay, well, we'll give details about that in a few minutes. Just staying with Bridget for one second, do you know, I mean, as you say, it was quite unusual for her to pick up the pipes. Do you know where her interest in the pipes came from? Or was there somebody in the family or somebody in the area, or what sparked it?
I've asked questions from family members, and they've been so generous with photographs and documentation. But I suppose the fact that I can't speak to herself is difficult, and that the information that we have available. But perhaps she heard, you know, maybe Patsy Toohey recordings. One can only assume that, you know, she had listened to those in times past, and of course Martin, knowledge from Martin as well.
Leah Rosam, of course, was a very influential figure in 20th century Uilleann pipe playing, and you have an amazing photograph here of many small boys in suits playing various instruments, mostly pipes, but there's a fiddle there as well, I think, and there's one single woman, girl, in the middle. Her name was Betty Nevin. Did a lot of girls come through his classes?
Well, when I researched, I was very fortunate to meet Helena Rousham, his daughter, who was a great store of information. And she was very generous with the information she gave me. And I had seen this photograph before. The woman in question is Betty Nevin. And this is taken at the Mullingar Fla in 1951, a line of pupils. But other women that Leo taught included Phyllis Croders, who's, I think, is listening tonight, and hello to her. I met her a couple of weeks ago, and her lovely daughter Maura, and she's actually 95, and Betty's in her 80s now. And he would have taught both of those women. Other women on the books were Helena herself, Olivia Blake, and Maura Reid. But having spoken to Betty Nevin, having spoken to Phyllis Croders, really huge compliments to Leo on his teaching and encouragement. And indeed, Betty's father was instrumental in setting up and finding a premise for the premises for the Pipers Club. And she recalls holding out her fingers, her father bringing her to Leo to, and he held out her fingers. She held out her fingers to see if they were suitable for playing the pipes. But she there's some lovely film footage from the Flan 1951 of Betty on the on a truck with Paddy Maloney and a few other familiar faces. But certainly had a very successful students. Unfortunately, Betty stopped playing when she got engaged, and it seems to have been a common theme that at that time it was the choice between family and music or family and life on the road, and that certainly has been a sentiment that was echoed by some of the women that I've interviewed.
And would they have gone back? Because I know, I mean, some women like Kitty Hayes on the concertina, or even Lucy Farr, I think, you know, some women would have stepped away from women would have stepped away from music for a while and then gone back to it later on when kids were bigger. Did that kind of thing happen?
They didn't take up the pipes again, but they certainly listened to piping. And I know Phyllis Crothers loves classical music and continuously listens to classical music, but certainly was well able to recall the repertoire of tunes, and indeed say mentioned that the Fox Chase was a particular favourite of hers, even at 95. But certainly there are women in their 80s playing. Lisa Shields, who was instrumental in notating and documenting the tunes of the Munster Pipers Canon Goodman collection, and who's also the TunePal tester app, a tester for the TunePal app, still playing pipes, and she's in her 80s. But certainly probably a physical aspect to the pipes at that age.
Okay, let's listen to another tune. This is Debbie Quigley now. You might introduce this for us.
Yes, this is a track from a good friend of mine, Debbie Quigley. She was taught by Chris Langan. She was from Bangor, originally in County Down, but emigrated to Toronto. And she learned her piping from Chris. Got her first practice set from Chris Langan as well. I've been to the Chris Langan Tonal in Toronto. But certainly a master of reed making and all things maintenance relating to the pipes, I suppose, pro at dealing with climatic conditions as well. But this particular track is a slow air from her album with Peter Colt.
That was Debbie Quigley there with the lovely Sweet Banks of the Moy. Louise, things began to change a lot from, say, the mid-20th century onwards, and a lot more women began to play the pipes. Why was that, do you think?
I think there's greater visibility of women playing the Uilleann pipes now, which is a real positive for all young girls who would like to take up the instrument, and certainly sources of inspiration around the country, indeed North America, Canada, Cuba, Japan, many women taking up the pipes. I think there are a number of factors. Probably number one, the quality, the instruments are much better, the availability of instruments, the greater availability of instruments, and adaptations. And from interviewing women and interviewing family members of pipe makers, adaptations seem to have always been there. You know, it was something that was natural.
Do you mean by adaptations as in making the instrument fit the person?
As in the connection between the bellows and the bag. There's a blowpipe, and to make that shorter. Cool. And indeed adaptations with the length of straps and things like that. And that seems to have been, you know, commonplace. And indeed my own set, when I acquired it at 13 or 14, had small adaptations, which made playing the instrument more suitable for a woman.
One thing we didn't mention, and at the time when, say, Margaret Murphy and some of those women were coming into their own, there was that whole movement about the Gaelic revival and the founding of the Pipers Club in Dublin and in Cork. Would that have made a difference? Would there have been a certain type of woman who was maybe part of those clubs, or who had family backgrounds in people who were interested in the revival, who maybe encouraged them particularly? Did
absolutely
that play a role?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of the women that I've spoken about and interviewed family members, there were all very proud of their cultural heritage, all very proud of the Irish language, dancing, music. It was a real common thematic element that the language was spoken, that they learned Irish dancing, that they learned Irish traditional music. And certainly that would have been a huge feature of each family home. Indeed, Phyllis Crowder's father had seen Eamon Cant playing the pipes, and he in turn wanted a son to play the pipes, but the son didn't arrive. So next in line was Phyllis Crowder's.
Okay, well, lucky her. You mentioned Cuba. What's the piping connection in Cuba?
That's right. There are Uilleann pipers all over the world now, which is fantastic to see. And I suppose social circumstances have changed for women dramatically over the last number of years. And certainly the performance platform for women is huge as well. So indeed, festivals in Cuba, women teaching pipes in Cuba, children learning pipes all over the world, which is great. And certainly there's a Pipes on Loan scheme. Many people are operating that. I know Napi Brillin are running the Pipes on Loan scheme, if there's anyone listening that would like to learn them. And there's Rosalind O'Leary in Cork, who was a Cushla Avondhu, and she's a Pipes on Loan scheme. And Mary Mitchell in UCC, a great piper as well, an academic, has sets on loan at UCC for anyone that's interested in learning.
And I presume up in Armagh as well, at Navalley and the Valleys and the Armagh
That's
Pipers
right.
Club.
And actually over in Mayo recently, Eimear Mayock's great piper as well, is working closely with Music Generation, and she's promoting all aspects of piping in Mayo, which is fantastic.
So is that perception of the pipe somehow not being an instrument for girls, is that gone?
Yeah, well, I think I never thought of, when I started learning the pipes, it was that really never crossed my mind. And that seems to be common in the women that I've spoken to and interviewed, that it was the love of the instrument, it was the sound of the instrument, and it was the magic of the instrument that really encouraged people to start playing the pipes. But you can see from the general public, and many people do have that impression that the pipes are a difficult instrument. But I think if they're learnt in stages, it's a lot easier, and I think people acquire a practice set and then add on the drones and the regulators. But I think when you initially view the set in its entirety, it looks daunting, but certainly when people realise that you can break it down and learn it in stages, it becomes an easier and more approachable instrument to learn.
I think at the latest figure, are roughly, I think in Napi Brillin, I think they have about 70 girls a week going through their classes, so which is a great number.
Yeah. That's a huge improvement, yeah. Really. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Okay, well, it's an absolutely fascinating topic, Louise. It's great to see all these women and their stories being made public. What's your next aim with this work, or what's the plan now?
Well, I'd like to continue documenting and creating a timeline of the women that played in the 19th and 20th century, and really present a more inclusive picture of the piping tradition, and really identify the women that were a part of this piping tradition. I think it probably has musical importance, cultural, historical, probably social aspects to it as well. And I continue to interview, collate information, gather sources of data. And it's something really that I feel passionately about, that should be documented, and just really to continue to, as I said, to document women in piping.
And as well as the 8 women or so you've, you know, profiled in detail in your work, do you think there are others out
there? I hope there are. When I started out on this journey, I knew of the women that were profiled in O'Neill's. And certainly it's been a fascinating discovery to add to that list and to create a more substantial timeline of women. And it's something I'm going to continue doing. And who knows? I mean, there could be several other women out there. But certainly lovely to have a more comprehensive list of women in the Uilleann piping tradition.
Okay, well, we're going to finish a track, and you mentioned obviously your family, your father and your sister as being your musical backbone. So what is this track?
This is a track from our latest album called The Real Note, which was voted Album of the Year by Track Connect in 2017, I think. It's a track which features Dad on the accordion and my sister Michelle, and it's Planxty Davis, which we got from a recording of the great piper Sean McAloon. And it finishes up with two reels, a reel from Michael Coleman called The Queen of May, and the last one is called Johnny Henry's.
Well, thanks a million, Louise, and best luck.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Music there from Louise Mulcahy with her sister Michelle and her father Mick from their album The Real Note. Thanks again for listening to RT Radio 1's The Rolling Wave podcast. For rights reasons, the music here is shorter than in the original broadcast. So if you want to hear the full versions, just visit the Rolling Wave homepage on rte.ie/radio1. This programme was first broadcast on the 24th of February 2019. Till the next time, Gura Míle Maithí, agus slán.